You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. Hey there, welcome back to Traffic Pattern. I'm Pattern, and today we're getting into one of those topics that every student pilot dreads and every experienced pilot still respects. Crosswind landings, specifically. The stuff the books don't really teach you. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. Great gear for pilots and aviation lovers. Check them out. Alright, so here's the thing about crosswind landings. You open up the pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge, you look at the diagrams, and it all makes perfect sense on paper. Wing low method, crab method, some combination of both. You see the little airplane silhouette with arrows showing the wind, and you think, yeah, I got this. Then you go out on a gusty day and the airplane is trying to throw you into the weeds, and suddenly those nice clean diagrams don't feel so helpful anymore. Let's walk through this together. Not the textbook version, the real version, the stuff that actually helps when the windsock is stiff and your palms are a little sweaty. First, let's talk about what the books get right. The two primary techniques are the side slip, also called the wing low method, and the crab. In the side slip, you lower the upwind wing and apply opposite rudder to keep the nose aligned with the runway. In the crab, you point the nose into the wind so your ground track stays on centerline, and then you kick it straight just before touchdown. Most pilots end up using a combination of both, and that's perfectly fine. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The books present these as two separate techniques, like you pick one off a menu. In reality, almost every crosswind landing is a blend. You might crab on final to keep your workload low, then transition to a side slip in the last few hundred feet. That transition is the part nobody talks about enough. So let's talk about it. When you're on about a half mile final, crabbed into the wind, your ground track looks great, your airspeed is stable, everything's tidy. Now you need to get from that crab angle to a wing low configuration before the wheels touch. The mistake most students make is trying to do this all at once right at the flare. That's too late. You're already dealing with the round out, the power reduction, the sight picture change, adding a big control input transition on top of all that is asking for trouble. Instead, start your transition earlier. I like to begin somewhere around 200 feet above the ground, maybe even a little higher, on a gusty day. Gradually lower that upwind wing. Gradually add opposite rudder. Let the airplane settle into the side slip smoothly. By the time you're crossing the threshold, you should already be in a stabilized wing low configuration with the nose pointed right down the runway. Now here's a nuance that trips people up. When you lower that upwind wing, the airplane wants to turn toward the wind. That's why you need the opposite rudder. But here's what the diagrams don't show you. The amount of rudder you need changes as you slow down. At approach speed, you might need moderate rudder. As you bleed off speed in the flare, you'll need more. This is a dynamic thing. You're constantly adjusting. It's not set it and forget it, and let me tell you about the feet. Your feet are doing the most important work in a crosswind landing, and I don't think we emphasize that enough in training. Your hands get all the attention, aileron into the wind, everybody knows that. But the rudder work is what actually keeps you on centerline and aligned with the runway. If your feet are flat on the floor or just along for the ride, you're going to have a rough time. Here's a drill I give my students. On your next calm wind day, go out and practice flying the runway centerline on a low approach. Not to land, just fly down the runway at about 50 feet, keeping the nose on centerline with your rudder while you make small aileron corrections. Get comfortable with your feet doing real work. Then when the crosswind shows up, your feet already know what to do. Let's talk about something else the books barely mention. The visual picture. When you're in a proper crosswind sideslip on short final, it looks weird. The runway is tilted in your windscreen because your wings are banked. Your natural instinct is to level the wings because tilted looks wrong. Fight that instinct. If the runway looks level in a crosswind, you're not correcting enough. I remember my first real crosswind landing as a student, maybe 15 knots gusting to 20 from the left. My instructor had been talking me through it, and on short final I had this beautiful side slip going, left wing down, right rudder in, nose on the numbers, but it looks so strange to me. The runway at an angle like that, that I leveled the wings right before touchdown, and we drifted sideways and chirped the tires in a way that made both of us wince, my instructor just said. Trust what the wind is telling you, not what your eyes want to see. That stuck with me. Now let's get into gusty crosswinds because that's a whole different animal. Steady crosswinds are actually pretty manageable once you get the technique down. But when the wind is gusting, the crosswind component is changing every few seconds. You might need 10 degrees of bank one moment and 20 the next. Here's the practical advice. In gusty conditions, add half the gust factor to your approach speed. So if the winds are reported as 150 at 15 gusting 25, that's a 10-knot gust spread. Add 5 knots to your normal approach speed. This gives you a little extra energy to handle the sudden changes. The Airman certification standards expect you to maintain approach speed within plus 5 minus 0 in gusty conditions, so that extra speed is built into the standard. But here's the part the books really skip over. In gusty crosswinds, you need to be more aggressive with your corrections, and you need to make them faster. A gust hits, the wing comes up, you need that aileron in now, not in 2 seconds. This is where practice and muscle memory matter. You don't have time to think through the correction. It needs to be reflexive. The examiner is looking for you to maintain control of the airplane throughout the approach and landing. They want to see positive corrections. What that means in plain language is, don't let the airplane wander. When it moves, correct it. When the wind changes, adjust. Be active on the controls. A student who is making corrections, even imperfect ones, is demonstrating better airmanship than one who lets the airplane drift and then makes one big panicked input. Let me share a concept that really helped me as a student. Think of your ailerons and rudder as having a conversation. They're always talking to each other. More aileron into the wind means more opposite rudder to keep aligned. Less bank means less rudder. They move in coordination but opposite directions. If you change one, you change the other. Once you start thinking of it as a coordinated pair rather than two separate controls, crosswind landings start to click. All right, let's talk about the touchdown itself, because this is where most of the ugly stuff happens. In a proper crosswind landing, the upwind main wheel touches first, then the downwind main, then the nose wheel. This is not what most students expect. They're used to both mains touching at the same time. In a crosswind, that slight bank means one wheel gets there first, and that's exactly right. The key is what happens after touchdown, and this is the biggest thing the books gloss over. After the wheels are on the ground, the crosswind is still there. It didn't go away just because you landed. You need to keep that aileron into the wind. In fact, you should progressively increase it as you slow down. Full aileron into the wind during the rollout. This keeps the upwind wing from lifting and prevents the wind from getting under it and weather vanning you off the runway, and the rudder work continues too. Now you're using the rudder to stay on center line during the rollout. The airplane is going to want to turn into the wind, your feet are still working. The landing isn't over until you're off the runway and stopped. I've seen students nail the touchdown and then relax everything on the rollout, and the airplane swerves and suddenly you're heading for the runway edge lights. The rollout is part of the landing. Here's something else I want you to think about. Know your personal crosswind limit, and know your airplane's demonstrated crosswind component. Those are two different numbers. The demonstrated crosswind component is the maximum crosswind in which the airplane was tested during certification. For a Cessna 172, that's 15 knots. But that doesn't mean a brand new student should be out there in 15 knots of crosswind. Your personal limit should start lower and grow as you gain experience and proficiency. Maybe you start at 8 knots, then after some practice and some duel with your instructor, you bump it to 12. Eventually, you might be comfortable up to the demonstrated limit, but if you haven't flown in 3 weeks and the crosswind is reported at the demonstrated limit, maybe today's not the day to push it. The Airman Certification Standards test you in actual crosswind conditions, and the examiner will note if the winds are calm and may reschedule or adjust the flight to include crosswind practice. One more thing, and this is important, it is completely okay to go around. If you're on short final and the crosswind is beating you up, if you're not stabilized, if the airplane is not where you want it to be, go around. Full power, pitch up, clean up, come back and try again, or go to a different runway, or go to a different airport. There is zero shame in a go-around. Every experienced pilot has stories about times they should have gone around and didn't, and those stories rarely end well. I had a student once who was convinced that going around meant failure. We spent an entire lesson just doing go-arounds. I'd set up situations on final and say, "Would you continue this approach?" And sometimes the answer was yes, and sometimes it was no. By the end of that lesson, she was calling go-arounds with confidence, and her crosswind landings actually improved because she wasn't forcing bad approaches to work anymore. Let's wrap this up with some practical takeaways you can use the very next time you fly. 1. Start your transition from crab to side slip early, 200 feet or higher. Give yourself time. 2. Your feet are doing the real work. Practice rudder precision on calm days, so it's automatic on windy days. 3. In the flare, trust the sight picture even though it looks tilted. That's what a proper correction looks like. 4. After touchdown, keep correcting. Full aileron into the wind during the rollout. Rudder to stay on centerline. 5. Know your personal crosswind limit. Be honest with yourself. It's okay to grow into it gradually. And 6. Go around if it's not working. That's the sign of a skilled pilot, not a struggling one. Crosswind landings are one of those skills that you never stop refining. I've been flying for years and I still have crosswind landings that make me wince. The difference is now I know what went wrong and I can fix it on the next one. Give yourself grace. Keep practicing. And fly with an instructor in gusty conditions until you're truly comfortable. That duel time is some of the best money you'll ever spend in aviation. All right, that's our show for today. Today's discussion drew from the FAA Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge and the Airplane Flying Handbook, both of which are free on the FAA's website. Also reference the Airman Certification Standards for Private Pilot. If you want to dig deeper, those are fantastic resources. Radio Hangar is an AI-generated broadcast built by people who genuinely love aviation. You can learn more and find past episodes at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. go fly safe. And the next time the windsock is stiff, don't avoid the crosswind runway. Go practice, that's where the learning happens. Radio Hangar, keep the blue side up.